We are going to fight. We're going to be here, and we're not going away, and nothing is going to stop us. You know, this is how we fight back. And by going back to work, going back and reclaiming Rich's Nightclub, you know, a violent incident took place 2 weeks ago or a week ago, but it's still our safe space. At the end of the day, it's still our space.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. UK bans private doctors from treating trans kids. Idaho drag queen wins $1 million defamation lawsuit. And pride is personal for a target of San Diego pellet gun attack. All that and more this week because you've found This Way Out.
I'm Melanie Keller.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending June 1st, 2024. Private clinics and practitioners in the United Kingdom will be banned from dispensing puberty blockers to patients under the age of 18, just like the National Health Service. NHS England limited the use of trans youth puberty blockers to clinical trials in March. The expanded so-called emergency ban is the capper on the assault on trans rights by the Tory government, which is expected to lose badly in upcoming national elections in July. The emergency ban applies to private doctors in the UK, as well as prescriptions issued by clinics in Europe. Included is the popular Singapore-based Gender GP, which issues its prescriptions through European doctors. According to the May 29th announcement, young patients who are already being treated with puberty blockers will continue to be able to access them. Other therapeutic uses of the medications can continue. The emergency ban will be enforced from June 3rd to September 3rd. The emergency was brought on by the controversial CAS report that urged a total ban on hormone therapies and puberty blockers for trans patients under the age of 18. When it was released in March, NHS England halted the treatments, calling it a landmark decision in the best interests of the child. Adding private practitioners to the ban this week closed what anti-trans forces called a loophole in that earlier directive.
Gender-affirming healthcare for trans young people is a highly controversial issue in the UK and some parts of Europe. Nearly two dozen U.S. states have also banned pediatric gender-affirming healthcare. Brown University professor of pediatrics Michelle Forcier told Scientific American that bans are based on inaccurate information intended to create drama and make people take a side. Data compiled by the publication indicates that denying care is not a neutral option. Current research suggests that puberty-pausing hormones offer young patients a safe environment for exploring their identities. The Lancet is another prestigious scientific journal assessing the bans in the U.S. and U.K. Its critique concludes that such bans actually appear designed to protect traditional gender norms rather than children. Whether the gender-affirming care ban will extend beyond September will be up to whatever government wins Britain's national elections in July.
Adults who help minors leave Tennessee to access gender-affirming care or abortions without the consent of their parents or legal guardians can now go to jail. This thanks to Republican lawmakers and Governor Bill Lee. That makes it the first U.S. state to call such adult accomplices Class A misdemeanor offenders, eligible for up to a year behind bars. Pediatric gender-affirming health care is already banned in Tennessee. Queer advocacy groups in the state, like Out Memphis, stressed that the new law doesn't prevent parents from taking their own children outside the state for care. Executive Director Molly Quinn says, "Above all, we want these families to know help is available and that you don't have to fear leaving the state to get your child the care that they need." A U.S. federal appeals court upheld Tennessee's pediatric gender-affirming health care ban in September. Queer advocates are hoping that the U.S. Supreme Court will eventually hear a challenge to it.
Restrictions on classroom discussions involving LGBTQ people or race in New Hampshire violate free speech rights, according to U.S. Federal District Court Judge Paul J. Barbadora. Advocates call his ruling this week the first court decision to strike down legislation against so-called woke ideology in the state's public schools. A coalition of the National American Civil Liberties Union and its New Hampshire chapter, teachers' unions, and queer and disability rights groups sued the state, charging that the law's wording was unconstitutionally vague. Judge Barbadora agreed. He described the legislation as viewpoint-based restrictions on speech that do not provide either fair warning to educators of what they prohibit or sufficient standards for law enforcement to prevent arbitrary and discriminatory enforcement. A spokesperson for New Hampshire's Attorney General said that state officials are currently reviewing the court's order and will consider next steps, including whether to appeal.
U.S. National Park Service employees can celebrate LGBTQ pride in uniform again this year. It had become routine in recent years, but a May 9th memo prohibited the tradition. Outrage ensued. That's when Secretary of the Interior Deb Haaland stepped in. She issued a memo of her own on May 24th, directing NPS bureau leaders or their designated officials to determine how and when bureaus should participate in these externally organized events. This could include marching units and parades, booths at parades, events, etc. This would allow employees to participate in uniform representing their respective bureau. This direction takes effect immediately. GLAAD President and CEO Sarah Kate Ellis told The Advocate, "We owe thanks to Park Service employees who spoke up about the discriminatory policy and who work every day to make all feel welcome to enjoy the parks that belong to all of us."
An Idaho drag queen has won more than $1 million in a defamation lawsuit against a rabidly right-wing blogger. The aptly named drag performer Mona Lisa Million is Eric Posey in civilian life. Blogger Summer Bushnell claimed that Posey had exposed himself at a June 2022 Pride event in Coeur d'Alene. Bushnell had posted an altered video of his performance claiming that his fully exposed genitals were blurred out. The district court jury unanimously awarded Posey $926,000 for proving defamation. Because he proved that Bushnell knowingly misrepresented the situation with a reckless disregard for the truth, $250,000 in punitive damages was added to that. The doctored video has been widely viewed on social media and gained widespread news coverage. It actually prompted a police investigation. With tearful hugs for his attorneys and friends, when the verdict was announced, Posey told reporters, "The judicial system did what needed to be done." Some of the jurors approached Posey outside the courthouse. One said, "I'm so sorry you went through this." Another told him, "I'm really glad you got the justice you deserve."
Finally, for the first time in its history, the famed Cannes Film Festival has awarded a transgender woman the Best Actress trophy. 52-year-old Spanish actor Carla Sofia Gascon won for her title role as a Mexican drug lord who comes out as trans in the musical crime comedy Emilia Perez. Gascon dedicated her victory in her acceptance speech to all transgender people who suffer and must keep faith that changing is possible. She predicted, "Tomorrow, there will be plenty of comments from terrible people saying the same things about all of us trans people." Gascon's knew whereof she spoke. Marianne Maréchal of the country's Reconquête party led the stream of far-right French politicians spewing anti-trans hate on social media. Maréchal called Gascon's performance female interpretation. She charged that progress for the left is the erasure of women and mothers. Six European queer advocacy groups have joined together to file a formal complaint against Maréchal with the Paris public prosecutor for transphobic insults. Attorney Etienne Deschuliher fired back, "Marianne Maréchal's comments deny the very existence of transgender people, as well as the violence and discrimination they suffer on a daily basis." Maréchal's diatribe is still up on her social media account. In anticipation of the hateful response, Gascon ended her acceptance speech with what she called a message of hope, reminding people that, like Amelia Perez, we all have the opportunity to change for the better, to become better people. If you have made us suffer, it is time for you also to change.
That's News Wrap, Global Queer News with Attitude, for the week ending June 1st, 2024. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon, edited by Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Michael LeBeau. Stay healthy.
And I'm Melanie Keller. Stay safe.
Straight military personnel will have to shower with homosexual...
To accept the principle that homosexuals can't shower with other people is a degree of discrimination that goes far beyond this. I mean, we don't get ourselves dry cleaned.
Hello, I'm Barney Frank, and you are listening to This Way Out, the international radio show for all our sexually diverse communities.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
Hello, and happy Pride Month. I'm Daniel Vasillas, producer and reporter here at This Way Out. This month, we are presenting a vibrant collection of stories and interviews that highlight the LGBTQ+ community through four special features. This week, Pride is personal and close to home for many of us as we will discuss the recent pellet gun attacks in San Diego targeting LGBTQ+ bars. Around 1 a.m. on May 18th, early Saturday morning, four LGBTQ+ establishments were reportedly shot at Pex Bar, The Rail, Number One on Fifth Avenue, and Rich's, all of which are located in the queer-friendly neighborhoods of Hillcrest and North Park. Police have not released any information about the attack, but witnesses say the assailant, whose identity is currently unknown, was driving a BMW at the time of the incident. This week, I spoke with Eddie Reynoso. Reynoso is the publisher of the LGBTQ San Diego County newspaper and the founder and executive director of the Equality Business Alliance, which serves the community as a chamber of commerce. Eddie also is an employee of Rich's and was not only present during the attacks, but impacted by the gel pellets fired. Before you listen, some of the subject matter mentioned during our interview is a bit distressing. A caution if you or anyone you're listening with is sensitive to these topics. Let's get into our conversation.
For a lot of people who've been reading the stories, right, I've read several articles of, you know, San Diego pellet gun attacks. This has taken place in these bars. A lot of people don't have the understanding that San Diego's LGBTQ area, right, it's more of a concentrated space.
Yeah. So Hillcrest is it's a small community. It's a small neighborhood of about 35,000 people. San Diego defines its neighborhoods according to business boundaries, right? So within our boundaries, there's about 35,000 people. And I know that because I'm the head of the LGBT Chamber of Commerce. And there's really two main avenues where our bars are concentrated. Prior to 2012, there was really four or five streets where the majority of our bars were and businesses were concentrated. That's important because the way the shootings were carried out and the time that they happened at these individual venues means that someone had to, they had to look up the businesses, And B, they had to plan a route that would allow them to fire shots from the passenger side of a vehicle and hit employees or patrons of these establishments.
From what I understand, numerous bars, specifically LGBTQ bars, were targeted for this attack. Take me back to the experience of just getting ready for the night.
You know, historically, the weekend before a major holiday is historically quieter. Our proximity to Los Angeles means that we get a lot of people that either leave town or come to town. So just, it's kind of like this, you know, our locals head to Los Angeles, the Los Angeles locals head to San Diego, and all the people from Phoenix come to San Diego. So that weekend is a quiet weekend for us. Any major holiday weekend or any, you know, pride, the weekend before tends to be quiet. So that was, it was no different. You know, I got ready, I got myself dressed. Because it was quieter, we were a little bit more relaxed. We were congregated, you know, chatting and laughing and cracking jokes. In the security footage, you see a lot of security outside. And there's, in that footage, there's probably more security outside at that moment than we would have on a regular weekend. And it's just because, you know, they're assigned to a particular station. But because it was also, you know, almost 1 a.m., you know, it's a little bit more relaxed. We have a little bit more time to, you know, chat and, you know, crack jokes or laugh or tell stories.
You know, the initial ringing out of what you would understand as bullets, what was going through your head?
To give you context about that particular moment, that Tuesday, the shooting was on Friday. That Tuesday, I was interviewed by an FBI agent with the Civil Rights Division in regards to a death threat or shooting, a mass shooting threat that I took the phone call. Because I'm the VIP host, I manage the phone line, right? So I carry this, I take the cell phone home with me, and that's the club's main line. So I get the bulk, I take the brunt of angry customers, death threats, bomb threats, any kind of attacks. I'm the person on the other side of the phone that's receiving that anger, that's receiving those threats. So I have to make the choice of, am I going to report this to police? Am I going to write a report? Am I going to make a note? Am I going to alert my supervisors or the owners about this? So leading up to this, you know, there's been times when we've filed police reports. We have been hit with explosives, which I now know is a commercial device. I've had rocks thrown at me.
Are these experiences that LGBTQ people in San Diego experience regularly?
I wouldn't say LGBTQ people experience them, but I would say that LGBTQ businesses experience.
Okay.
And there's a difference, and I say that because as businesses, you know, we take the brunt of that, you know, whether it's bomb threats, death threats, shooting threats, you know, mass shooting threats. We have to make the choice of when to take it seriously, right? So I had been interviewed that week. The idea that someone was going to shoot me was already on my mind because, you know, 4 days earlier, I had been interviewed by the FBI. So that night, you know, something caught my attention, and it was the sound of a vehicle approaching at a high rate of speed and then slowing down. I very vividly remember hearing that and turning to look at that direction. But what caught my attention of all the cars that were passing by was that this one in particular, there was someone hanging, what appeared to me as hanging out the window.
Yeah.
And either filming, or holding something that was giving off a light, a blue light. I took that as they were filming whatever was in the backseat. And they were yelling obscenities at the same time. And as I was watching the gentleman, one guy what I thought was filming, I noticed movement in another window. And that's kind of when I realized,
yeah,
this isn't good, because he was bracing himself. He was very vividly bracing himself and holding as a AK-47 style pistol or sawed off gun. It was a moment of like, I'm going to die.
Yeah.
Like it's a moment of like, I remember thinking I need to cover myself. I need to run. You know, we do an active shooter training and we tell people to run, run, hide, fight. I thought, I'm going to run towards the direction of these vehicles, because if I run into the club, I'm either going to be chased inside and he's going to kill more people, or I'm going to be, you know, trapped by people who don't know what's happening outside. And I thought, if I run towards the vehicles, I at least have something to hide behind. I saw the gun pointed in my direction and I was still following the car. But by the time the gun was already up, he was already firing and I was hearing the gunfire and I knew it was an automatic weapon, but I was also suddenly confused because it was softer. It was not quite as loud as gunfire, but it was still gunfire.
Eddie, you were struck.
Yeah. I got hit directly in the eye by what I now know is a pellet. You know, at the time you don't know, I didn't know. The shot hit my eye. And at that point I knew I was not a good thing. I was confused because I felt something explode and I remember feeling it hit the lip of my eyebrow. I remember feeling it, whatever exploded, what I thought was my eyeball or my part of my head, my bone, hitting my shirt. And, you know, when I say that your mind processes, 1,000 things or, you know, million thoughts in a split second, it's because you're experiencing all of this and somehow your mind is like, you know, trying to protect you. It's trying to survive. So everything slows down so that you can process your thoughts on how you're going to survive this moment.
I understand that it's incredible.
You know, the mind is a very powerful tool. But when we become so desensitized and normalize incidents of hate and violence, especially amongst LGBTQ people, you know, we go to work every night knowing that we are at risk. You know, I not to take away from law enforcement or other people with dangerous jobs, but the reality is that as LGBTQ people, we go out to our safe places and we're not necessarily safe. We're not necessarily protected. You know, this is San Diego. And I think of Harvey Milk and him getting killed by gun violence and him saying, you know, we have to come out to everyone, you know, from, you know, kids in Altoon, Pennsylvania to Richmond, Minnesota, you know, we have to come out. But I also take that thought and remind myself, like, if this is happening in San Diego, this is happening in Altoon, Pennsylvania, this is happening in Richmond, Minnesota, this is happening in Winnemucca, Nevada, where I'm from. Like, if this can happen in San Diego, it can happen in Bakersfield, California, it can happen in, you know, Albany, New York, it can happen anywhere. And it is happening. We're just not talking about it and we're underreporting it ourselves.
And because I know that we're nearing the end, I want to put this into context with Pride Month coming up.
Yeah.
You know, as you mentioned, like the weekend before Memorial Day is a slower season, and then you have Memorial Day that leads into Pride Month, and Pride Month is a space where all of us ideally can come together in community and share space with one another. With this event taking place, has your understanding of Pride Month upcoming changed?
We're all back at work to prove these people, you know, we're not going to back down. We are going to fight. We're going to be here, and we're not going away, and nothing is going to stop us. You know, there's no security measure that any club or business can do to stop someone with an AK-47 from going in and shooting them up. But as a community, we can be our own security measure by filing police reports when incidents of hate, when we're attacking incidents of hate, by being aware, by being vigilant. You know, this is how we fight back. And by going back to work, going back and reclaiming Rich's Nightclub, you know, a violent incident took place 2 weeks ago or a week ago, but it's still our safe space. At the end of the day, it's still our space.
San Diego police are adding patrols to the Hillcrest area, and police say they are investigating these attacks as hate crimes. The investigation is ongoing, and anyone with information is asked to call SDPD's non-emergency line at 619-531-2000. That's 619-531-2000. Thank you again to Eddie Reynoso for sharing his experience. Music heard during this feature is by Ketza, and I'm Daniel Vasillas with This Way Out. As always, take care and take pride.
Thanks for finding This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. NewsWrap was reported this week by Melanie Keller and Michael LeBeau, and produced by Brian DeShazer, with production assistance by Danielle Luisias, the producer of this week's special Pride feature. You heard background music from Laurel and Hardy Movies and by Ketza. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks Hal Myers of Santa Fe, New Mexico, and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Thanks also to Los Angeles cannabis provider MMD Shops for being a This Way Out Pride partner. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and the entire This Way Out crew, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on WOZO Knoxville, Tennessee, KRZA Alamosa, Colorado, to RRR Gladesville, New South Wales, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all. Happy Pride.